Good morning, everyone. I'm so glad to see everybody's here with us this morning. My name is Lorna Costantini, and I'm pleased to co-host today's show with Kim Case and Becky George. Our special guest today is Lee Colbert, and our session today is the featured teacher. And we're very happy to have Lee with us in that category, if you want to call it category. Right off the bat, I always ask this question, do we have new people in the session who have not been with us this morning? To any of our other shows. So if you are new, can you just give me a red check at the bottom of the participants window? You just click on that red check if you're new today. Great, okay. We still have some new people. Wonderful. Then I'm just going to take a second to walk through the features of Illuminate so that you do know how to participate. So we're just going to take those checks and X's out because we're going to have some poll questions in a minute. But using Illuminate. I think most of you figured out how to send a message to the chat room by typing in this empty field and clicking send. Just watch that you've got this room selected so that everyone can see your conversation. When we do give you mic privileges, the bottom left-hand corner of the microphone, click it on for an active microphone and off without it. And I hope my dog isn't really making a lot of noise, but that's what happens when we operate things from home. The bottom of the window, the participants window, if you want to raise your hand with a question, click on the hand and up it comes. And a number will appear in front of your name and we will give you either access to the microphone when the time is appropriate or we'll try and field your question in the chat window. Whiteboard tools, we're going to get you busy in a minute using the laser tool here. Right on the left-hand side of your whiteboard, you'll see a little blue wand with a starburst on it. We're going to ask you to use that in a few minutes while we use the world map to tell us where everybody's located. So that's really quick. I think if you have a question and things aren't working for you, just type it in the chat and either Peggy, Kim, or I will help you with it. We do have notifications for the new Illuminate version 10 that gives you audio and visual notifications of the different functions that you're using. Most of you are seeing that pop-up window or hearing the sound when people come into the room. You can disable that or change your option as you wish by going to the menu bar where it says Tools, select Preferences, and now you'll get two screens. You get one screen with a couple of options here. One, visual notification, so if you want to turn off that pop-off window, go through your options here, disable or enable, and then apply. Similarly, for the audio notifications, if they are bothering you, then it's audio notifications, select the appropriate function, apply, and you're done. I don't think we're doing application sharing, so I'm going to move right on to what we think is really important for you because that chat window starts going really, really quickly. People are adding their comments, adding questions, adding their own ideas, resources, and links. And we don't want to we don't want you to miss out on them. So on our website, we keep an archive of the Illuminate session, which shows you everything that's going on for the day. We have the audio file of the show. We have an MP4 file of it. And we have the chat log so that if you saw a link, missed a link, you'll find that information. We also have something called a Glam link. I think maybe Peggy can drop that in as well. All the links, everything goes on today's show. We put it in the Glam link so that you can access it later for anything that Lee has presented during the show. So one more thing, I don't want to forget a very special person in the chat, and that's Tammy Moore. She's with us faithfully every Saturday and providing closed captioning. So you can access that yourself. You'll see her typing. Please let anyone know who is hearing or visually impaired that we do have that service to offer to you. So, okay, let's move on to the chat window. So someone's already figured out how to get a coffee cup, but we're just going to ask you to just click on the wand, and I've got a hand right there, and locate yourself in the world. So I'm in St. Catharines, Ontario, in Canada. Peggy's in Phoenix. Kim's in San Antonio, and Lee is in Florida. So we've got, again, people in Great Britain. Often we get people in Thailand and Australia. I'm not sure whether someone's in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, maybe Hawaii. It's really exciting to see that spread of people all over the world because we know that we are connecting in a really global way. Hi from Buffalo. Do you still have snow, John? Great. Lots of fun, everybody. So let's move on to another tool. You're going to use those polling tools. That's the green check or the red X at the bottom of the participants window. And our first question is, have you ever read or commented on a blog post written by Lee? So green check if you have and a red X if you haven't. The bottom of the participants window is a green check and a red X. You just take one of those. Just waiting for everyone to cast their vote there. Okay, let's take a look at the results. For the people that voted, we have just about the same number of people who have commented and those who have not. And a few people didn't get a chance to post their answer. I'm going to clear the votes here and go to the next poll question, which is, have you ever watched a Palm Breeze Cafe show? I have to say I'm a red X myself. People haven't taken a chance to vote yet. Almost everyone. So let's take a look at the results. There, most people have not seen an episode of Palm Breeze Cafe, and 9 people, 23% of the show have. So yes, you can watch it online, I believe, and we're going to let Lee talk about that in a few minutes. So we're going to clear the votes and move to the last poll question. Is, do you use Twitter to connect to other educators? Well, everyone has voted. Let's take a look at the results. About 68 to 70% have, 14 have not, and about 17%, 7 people didn't have an opportunity to take a vote. So a large percentage of us in the show today are using Twitter to connect with educators. So. Hope you like that little bit of fun for the moment, and we're going to move on to introducing Lee Colbert, our special guest. Lee is an educator in Palm Beach County, Florida. She's been an elementary school teacher for 20 years and a district technology program specialist for 5. Her primary focus as an administrator was to engage teachers in new conversations to help them take the next step towards technology integration. Lee has now returned to the classroom. She's a blogger, and we'll give you her blog URL in a few minutes. She's a hockey mom. That's pretty exciting. And a co-host of a local cable TV show, Palm Breeze Cafe. Lee, we are very happy to have you with us. I know we've had an opportunity to flush out your presentation, and everyone, you're going to be really, really excited and happy to see the amount of information that and wealth of knowledge that Kim has. And so with that, Kim, I'm turning the mic over to you. And if you want to add any information to your introduction, please do so. And everybody, enjoy the show.
Well, thank you very much. I want to welcome everybody. I hope you're having a very nice holiday season. If you've celebrated Hanukkah, if you're getting ready to celebrate Christmas or whatever, even if you're not celebrating, I hope you're enjoying the season. It's even in Florida, yes, we have hockey, and although we don't have snow, we do have Santa Clauses in shorts and palm trees with lights, and somehow we managed to get into the festivities. A little bit about me, yes, I've been an elementary teacher for actually now 21 and a half years, and I was with the school district with the Department of Educational Technology for 5 years, and this week, I'm very excited to let you guys know that I've accepted a position back with my old team as the manager of the Educational Technology Department. So I'm really excited to go home again to the team that I really, really loved. And not only as a specialist that I was, but as the manager of the team. So it's going to be a huge learning curve. I won't be teaching anymore. I think that will disappoint a few people who were really excited that I was going back to the classroom. I did love the kids. I do love the kids. But it just really was not a good fit for me anymore. So I'll be blogging about it, and hopefully you guys can help me flesh that out, because, you know, it's just it required a whole lot of thinking and deciding, but I had to do it very quickly. I interviewed on Monday, and I got a phone call just a few hours later offering me the job. So having said that, I am going to talk to you about my experiences in the classroom since my return back to the classroom. So here I was, having taught for 20 years, and then spent 5 years as a specialist helping teachers to integrate technology, and really started to lose touch with what was going on in the classroom. And I really do hope that doesn't happen again. But I do think there'll be some of that that happens, because it's just natural. And I hope you guys will help me stay focused on that and not let me lose touch. And I think I'm much stronger with my PLN now, and you guys aren't going to let that happen. So I'm calling this figuring it out, because I think we never really do tend to figure it out. And that's what I've been trying to do this last year and a half, trying to integrate technology with my kids and get past all of those barriers, because that seemed to be the word that kept popping up with everything that I tried to do. And it just wasn't as big an issue when I was training teachers to do all these things. I would sort of, I knew there were barriers, and I would help them to see how they could overcome these barriers. However, it wasn't as big an issue to me, because I wasn't dealing with them directly. So my PLN, my personal learning network, was huge in helping me figure parts of that out. And I'm not sure I ever really accomplished that completely, but at least they were a huge support system. And I do think we have some newbies in the room with us, and I do definitely recognize a lot of names. And just by the green check marks and seeing who uses Twitter for support, I think we have some seasoned personal learning network members. But for those of you who aren't comfortable with the PLN or know what it is, or maybe you've heard the term thrown around, it really is just the people with whom you learn. And we have PLNs in our real world. We have different PLNs. I think we have categories of PLNs. You have maybe church group PLNs. Your family is a PLN. And we have online personal learning networks as well. And I've come to start to refer to my PLN actually as online colleagues. I think the term PLN has, when you talk to real world people, I hate to use that term, but I don't know how to do it any other way. People in offline world, how's that? You know, as soon as you mention, oh, it's somebody I follow on Twitter or somebody on Facebook, they kind of roll their eyes like, oh, yeah, it's somebody you talk to about what you had for breakfast. But if you mention their online colleagues, somehow that seems to have more credibility. And I think until we get more people to have online colleagues, we'll not be able to use PLN with other people other than those who are actually in the PLN. So I know John Becker has had huge discussions about it last year at ISTE. It was an ongoing discussion about what term to use. So, yeah, Paul, I agree. I wish all teachers would buy into the power. And maybe we just need to use terminology that they're comfortable with to kind of lure them in. So, you know, this is kind of what happens, and this is one of the reasons why I depend so much on my PLN. This is kind of me, although that's a man there standing there, blah, 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 blah. That's what people in my faculty lounge, you know, hear when I'm talking about all the things that get me jazzed. Skype and blogs and Globster and digital storytelling, they hear wah, 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 wah. Hopefully that didn't blow your ears out there. But, you know, they're like, yeah, you know, they try to be polite, but they're like, whatever. And then on to, you know, things that concern them at the moment. That, you know, I think what they hear when I talk about blogs and Glogster and Google Earth, what they hear is it's going to require more work. And teachers are absolutely overworked. And until we can demonstrate the value over the amount of work it's going to require, it's going to be really hard to get teacher buy-in. So for me, the huge, my huge buy-in to my PLN and the largest part of my PLN is on Twitter. And I've always said that Twitter for me is the faculty lounge where you get to decide who comes in and stays. And, you know, it's kind of a little funny thing, but it's true. And it really is kind of a selfish PLN, but the PLN really is about you. And you get to decide, you know, who you want to learn from and who you don't. And that may not be mutual. Some people may want to learn from you, and you may not want to learn from them. But also keep in mind that Twitter comes and goes, and not to be taken personally. So if I'm not following you on Twitter, it's not because I don't want to learn from you. It's probably because I just haven't taken the time to explore who you are. And with me, it's really important that you have a bio and that you engage me in conversation so that I do notice you. And I think that's probably with most people who follow people back, it's because, you know, they get noticed and they engage in conversation. It's not that you have to do anything spectacular. It's just that when people start to talk to me, I start to build a relationship with them. So just like I'm not going to follow anybody into their classroom unless I have a reason, I'm not going to follow you on Twitter or on Facebook or anywhere unless I feel like there's some reason for me to do that. And so that's kind of like how I use Twitter. Now, everybody uses it their own way, and people should not I think people should not take it personally, and but I know that's hard because we all tend to be sensitive. But a bio is really important, and a picture is really important because you do want to make a personal connection with the person who's on Twitter, so or Facebook, you know. And to me, I use Facebook as a much more personal connection with people, and Twitter is open, and I do have students' parents who know about my Twitter account and follow me on Twitter, and, you know, and that's fine. I don't tweet anything that I wouldn't want published in the newspaper. On Facebook, I still subscribe to the same belief, but I do go a little more personal because I'm very much aware of who follows me on Facebook. So if I'm announcing something or I'm sharing something that's a little more personal, I do it on Facebook. And if I want to bring my Twitter followers over to Facebook to join on that conversation, I might tweet that if you follow me on Facebook, come over there for a moment and get people over there for the conversation. And that helps because sometimes I need help with a problem. I need my PLN for support. Gosh, I don't know where I'd be without my PLN, honestly. There are times when I just feel like I'm worthless, and I'm sure we all go through that. I feel like I'm just terrible at what I do, and, you know, I'm disappointing everybody, and it's my PLN that really stands behind me, and sometimes I feel like they're my cheerleaders, and it really does help a lot. So also, what's helpful to build your Twitter following, and I don't want to spend too much time on Twitter because I know most of you are already, experts at Twitter, but once you find somebody that you trust, look at who they're following, and then explore those people. So, you know, it's kind of like being at a party, I invite you to my party, and you start to talk to the other people who I've invited. So if you have something in common with me, chances are you'll have something in common with the other people at my party. Another thing is to explore lists. So what I do is I create lists. I only have a few lists, but I also follow other people's lists and let them do the work for you. That's one of the best things about having a PLN, is that they'll go out and research things where they've already done research and you don't have to reinvent the wheel. So one of my presentations, one of these days, is going to be how to get other people to do your work for you. And because I think that's what totally rocks about a PLN. Do you all agree about it? Yeah, I see some hands. So, and it's not like anybody is doing it against their will. But if you ask a question and somebody already has the answer in their head and they're, you know, they're responding, think about how much time that saves you from having to go find it. And you've got 12 people who respond with the same answer. I think that pretty much has the credibility right there. And also, if you're looking for some common information, for example, this one is an example of BLC10 that was building learning communities last year. Also, I know we have a hashtag here for Classroom 2.0. And if you put that search, this is the old Twitter interface, but if you put that search, that hashtag in the term, you'll pull up all the tweets from people who are talking about the same thing. And that's a great way to jump into conversations for related topics. I have this slide, but last night we realized that this particular page that Beth still created is down only because TweepML is down. I think they're creating a new site, perhaps another version. You know, according to them, it's a newer, better, greater version. So yes, Beth still is an amazing educator. If you don't know Beth, I recommend that you follow her on Twitter. Her Twitter name is at the bottom right of the corner, at Beth Still. But she did create a newbie-friendly Twitter list, and I just notified her that this site is down, and I have a feeling it won't be long before she creates a new one. So if you're looking for some people on Twitter who are friendly to newbies, and then you will want to watch for that new list. I'm sure she'll do it. I also have a Google Doc where people who are using Twitter with their students and school districts can enter. It's an open Google Doc, so you can just edit and put your information. Now, this is if you want to, you can use this however you want, but one of the things that I found people are using this for is building credibility and building documentation for bringing to their IT departments and their principals for perhaps opening up Twitter in their schools and bringing it forward through the firewall. So they're showing how districts are using Twitter for you know, viable purposes by showing all the people, all the districts that are using it and reaching out to these people who are on Twitter and then furthering the conversation. And it's all aggregated right here at this URL. And also there's other lists aggregated. Twitter for Teachers is a wonderful site where you can find other people with related interests. So my PLN has been so supportive. They've come back to me on my blog. When I went back to teaching, it was a truly nerve-wracking experience for me. And when I blogged about it, it was the comments and the support from people in my PLN that helped me get started. I had people offering supplies and collaborations with other gifted teachers. I teach gifted fourth grade. And I, you know, one of the things today, my intention is to not only share what I'm doing, but to maybe recommend, make recommendations to you if you want to kind of do the same thing, but to sort of blend your PLN with some of the things that you're doing, like blogging in your classroom. So if you're using Twitter, if you're blogging, you can send out tweets that you have a new blog post, bring the people from Twitter onto your blog, and some of those people who want to help support you. And it all comes back, because not only is your PLN helping you, but you're going to turn around and help your PLN when they need you as well. So here are just some of the comments that really warmed my heart. I also have a classroom blog. This is a screenshot from my latest post, and this is Lily, one of my students, who's a really good writer. And she blogged on her own blog. I use kid blogs for the students. And once in a while, when students write something exceptional, and it doesn't necessarily mean well-written, it's just something that really catches my eye, I'll go ahead and repost it to our class blog. So my class blog is students' posts, maybe some videos that we've created, maybe just something that I want the parents to read, so sometimes it's above the student's head. It's just kind of a montage of, you know, different things. But it's not, but it's definitely my blog on behalf of the class. It's not students' blog. So, you know, it's kind of like a, again, another stepping stone from my personal blog to my class blog, again, using Twitter. I reach out to my Twitter friends to help get spread the word about my class blog. And so I've received comments from all over the world to my class blog. And how wonderful is it to start the day reading a new blog post on the class blog and already having comments from all over the place. The students are so excited. And then, of course, we get the map out, and the students can even do some research about where the comment came from. And being that most of my PLN are educators, they usually leave comments about like where they're from or what's going on in their world, something genuine and related to the blog post. So it really helps show how relevant and meaningful our learning has become and how global. So it's been a really wonderful experience to incorporate the blogging into my classroom. And very important to getting that blogging support is to reach out and leave comments on other people's blogs as well. So you want to let people know you're there in the online community. Okay? If you don't comment and you don't tweet and you don't create, you don't acknowledge, people aren't going to know you're there. You can have a Twitter account, you can have a blog, but you must somehow engage people. And if you're not comfortable doing that, it's okay to lurk. But if you, at some point, don't take that next step, you won't build a PLN very far. So my best advice to you is that taking that extra step and start to engage people, even if it's on Twitter and you just simply respond with a, hey, I agree, or, you know, nice to see you here today, just let people start to see that you're there. So when I had my class blog, I wanted my students to get comfortable with the initial blogging, commenting. Last year when I first had the blog, I gave the students a classroom assignment. It was the first day, actually before the first day of class. And I gave them this little optional homework assignment where it was the day before school started where they came in just to meet me. And I don't know if everybody does it that way, but this certainly could be done at any point. I gave them the website for the class blog. It was a welcome post, and I wanted them just to go through the steps of leaving a comment. Now, I gave them also some contact information, and for me, and this is a matter of personal preference, I gave them the class Twitter account, but this was only for parents. I did not, and I do not, encourage my students who are only 9 and 10 years old to have Twitter accounts. So one of the things I've learned about doing this, and I changed this year, was when I gave them this assignment, I specified that this was only for parents. That is, let me go back, that the Twitter account to follow was only for parents. The other thing was I asked students to comment, and I gave them specific instructions about how to fill out the fields. Last year, I told them for email, if you look down at the bottom, sort of, you know, two-thirds of the way down, I told them to type in email at email.com because I didn't want them to put real email addresses. Well, and then I also told them anytime they're on any other website, the safest thing for them to do is to use email at email.com. And the reason is most blogs will not accept a comment unless you fill in that field. Excuse me. Well, what I found was some web software, some blogging software, actually took on that if more than one commenter leaves the same exact email address. And I found this on one of the blogs that I post for, which is Secret Life of Scientists. So I had all my students commenting using email at email.com, and what we found was every one of their comments posted as the same student. So they all said Joey, 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 although the comments were different. So what I discovered, and the developers at Secret Life of Scientists told me, was that the best thing for students to do, and this is a great tip, is to use their first name at example.com. Example.com is the 555. You know when you hear on TV and movies, somebody uses a phone number, and it always starts with 555? That's always going to be reserved and will never become a real phone number. And what I found was, or what the developers at Secret Life Sciences told me, was that example.com will never be a real domain. So that you can always use it and feel safe that that will never really be used. So if you want to have your students leave a safe email that's not real, have them use their first name at example.com. Okay? And for the website, originally last year I told them they could put in their favorite website. Well, that was a mistake. So this year I told them, leave a blank. And most blog comment fields forms will accept a blank website field. One of the other things that you need to be careful about, and I took great pains to spend time with them, was to discuss appropriate commenting. Now, I don't have slides about this, but Karen McMillan, who's also in this room, Karen, are you still here? Because I have not been following the chat. So she is McTeach. There she is.
Hi, Karen.
She's one of my cheerleaders. Anyway, Karen taught me about paper blogging, and she also was on with Classroom 2.0 Live talking about her blogging activity. So I don't want to steal her thunder, but I do recommend that you go back and watch her archive. And if we can post that link to her archive at some point during the session, that would be wonderful. But she does an activity where students create paper blogs, and it's just simply drawing out the blog and creating a blog post on paper. And then other students use sticky notes to post their comment. And they just put the sticky notes around the blog. So they have a chance to comment on the blog on paper using all the same information they would use online. And she has them walk around the room, or you know, I did it a little differently. I had them post their blogs on the wall, and students would post their comments on sticky notes as they felt they wanted to comment. And you could do a threaded comment by having students post their sticky notes on the end of another sticky note. So this year I did it that way as well. So it was a great way for them to get used to the commenting before they actually got a chance to go online. One of the great videos, or Common Craft creates wonderful, wonderful videos. They're part of the Explainers Network. Each video is probably less or right around 3 minutes. But protecting reputations online is a terrific one. And it really does a great job giving students and adults really good reasons why they want to be very careful about what they post. So one of the things I also do with my class blog, or excuse me, my Twitter account, my class Twitter account, is to put the website of my class blog and make sure that the people that I'm following are only other educators that I know in person, and very, very few. So I make that clear to people who are following my class blog. I do leave it open so that anybody can follow, but I want to be very careful about what shows up in my timeline. So I really follow very, very few people on this particular account. And when I posted to the Twitter account, and these are the posts hopefully most of the parents were following this account. These are the posts that I wanted them to receive on my Twitter account. I would always link back to the class blog or to some video or some article that I wanted them to read. So it was another great way to reach out to parents. Some of the tech-savvy parents already were on Twitter, and they really appreciated getting more information in another way. So I showed you Lily's article on the class blog. This is from last year, where I had one of the students creating an essay also, and I threw in a picture that really jazzed the kid. And you know how they have all these generators online? This was an iPhone generator where you could create a message. And once, this was from Reagan, she created a wonderful essay that was about using cell phones in class and texting in class. So I just went to this generator that created this for, it was kind of like, a free thing, and I just took the gist of her content and created this text image and posted it. And when the students all saw that I had this, they all asked, how did you do that? How did you do that? I showed them, and that generated a whole other excitement in my class, and then students were creating their own and engaging in a whole other process of writing, and soon they were even writing poems using this generator and then sharing their images. So that was fun. And then we started their own class blogs, and I use KidBlogs. Now, one of the things that I hope to do in my new position is to support some way for students to blog on their own. Right now, we have our class blogs, and that is for teacher blogging. And I hope to somehow help teachers facilitate student blogging as well. So this has been great fun. It has been so valuable. And the students, especially those very reluctant writers, have really embraced this. So I use KidBlogs. It's really easy. It's very easy to maintain, and I really recommend KidBlog to everybody. Oh, and it's free. So my favorite KidBlogging platform is KidBlog. A couple of things you want to watch for, and that is a little too personal information. Here's one of my students, and she wrote this great blog post, and she was going to be in a play. And here's a couple of things that were wrong with her post. She wrote that she was going to be in a musical. She mentioned the theater. She mentioned that, once again, on the right, that it was her. And she also gave a link to the theater website. On the theater website was the address of the theater, the schedule with the time. And so you could easily find where she would be and when she would be there. So I had to talk with her and explained what the problem was with it and had her edit it, she did, and she understood. So it's a good teachable moment to have the kids, you know, don't just edit for them, don't just delete it, but definitely this is a great opportunity to have a conversation with the students. And here's what she ended up with. Instead of "I will be there," she just said, "There is a fabulous musical. It's a great show, and there's the website." So she took herself out of it. Here's another one. This is another student. And this is, I included two different screenshots because, let me go back real quick. This is the teacher's view of this girl's post, again, using KidBlogs. But this is the view from the preview mode and also what it would look like if it was published. And that is published. And this is another student, but this is his edit mode. And you can see if you've ever used WordPress, it's just a scaled-down version of WordPress. Anyway, this student was interested in building his soccer team, and his father helped him write this, because they're looking for more players. And if you have students involved in sports, you know very well if you don't get enough players, you don't have a team. And that could be very devastating to the students who really want to play. So he wrote this post hoping to get more people out there. So any students interested will be practicing. But he named the team. He named the name of, he named the park. He named where you can find the park. And he named the date. And it's just way too much information. So again, more conversations to have with the kids. You never know where inspiration is going to come to the kids. This was a webinar we did with the students. And after having a webinar with, this is from Discovery Education, Philippe Cousteau gave a fabulous webinar about why we need to preserve the oceans. And then Julia wrote a wonderful blog post. I don't think it was even 2 hours after she got home that I found this ready to be approved. And she not only summarized the webinar, but then she created her own little competition. And if you read down a little bit, look at me, I'm pointing with my mouse as if you could see that. If you read down a little bit, it says, to win this competition, leave a comment containing a persuasive article from 3 to 10 sentences long about what you think is the most important place for humans to change our actions in simple ways. After receiving 6 articles, I will narrow my choice down to the top 3 and then choose a winner. And the award is that you will know that you have convinced someone out there that making a small change could do so much. This is a fourth grade student. She got 39 comments. At least she got 39 comments by the time I took the screenshot. Isn't that amazing? And she was inspired by that webinar. So doing webinars in your class, you know, this particular example is not just about the blogging, but it's also about doing webinars in the class, because you never know where inspiration is going to come. And webinars that are focused on students, you can find them through Discovery. They're free, and you can find them all over the place. Really, get involved. Bring them to your students. They're usually 30 to 40 minutes, and in, you know, social studies, science, language arts, you can find them on the Scholastic website. There was one recently for Thanksgiving. It was wonderful. And you'd be surprised if your students have a blogging platform, they'll use it. Another thing that you can do is collaborate with somebody in your PLN, especially somebody who has students that are at a different level than yours. So here's Dean, Dean Jareski. If you follow him on Twitter, you'll have a few good laughs. He's great fun. And also very, very smart. So you'll learn a lot from Dean, and he teaches at the University of Regina. My students love saying that, so I let them say it over and over and over again until they got it out of their system. But his students collaborated with my students, and I explained to them that we were doing, we were entering a unit on seasons, and over on the right, that was Janet and Chelsea, and they created a video for us where they went around the university asking university students why we have seasons, to explain why we have seasons. And believe it or not, most of the people they interviewed could not explain why we have seasons. It was kind of like, is it David Letterman who goes out on the street asking people questions like, who's our vice president? And, Jay Leno, okay, Jay walking with Jay Leno, thank you. So it was just like that. And it was a great laugh, but it was a great teachable moment for the students, and it was a wonderful way to enter our lessons into having seasons. And then we shared back with them what we learned about seasons. And so if you could do something like that, everybody learns from that, the adults, the children, everybody. Doing a voice thread as well. So I did a lot of collaborations with Dean students. And this one was, we were doing Florida Explorers, and this one was where one of his students created a voice thread on Canadian Explorers. My students had to go through all the slides on the voice thread and then compare and contrast the Canadian Explorers to the American Explorers that we were learning about, and then leave comments. So that was a wonderful voice thread and experience for my students as well. And that link is on the site as well, so you can see that. And the students will start to create their own voice threads. So this was created by one of my students, unsolicited, and it was right after the earthquake in Haiti. So this student was looking for ways that we could help. And so she left a voice thread, hoping people would leave comments. And then what you can do with your PLN is reach out and ask people to leave comments to help your students realize that they are reaching a global audience. And it also helps them make sure that what they're doing is, and what they're writing and what they're posting, has that extra effort. You know, that they look at their spelling, that they look at their punctuation, that they reread what they wrote a little better than when they are just leaving it for you on a piece of paper. And in my experience, it's really worked. Well, one of the nice things about VoiceThread is that if you're using an educator account, your VoiceThreads are automatically private. And you get to decide then what you want to do as far as your privacy settings. And you can change whether you want to allow anyone to view, anyone to comment, or if you want to moderate comments. So my recommendation is to check those three things, but leave off browse. Leave off to put it on the browse page. And then you'll see a message at the bottom letting you know what settings you've chosen. So if you're interested in doing VoiceThreads, there's wonderful wikis out there where you can find partners to collaborate with as well. That was, I'm going to skip through some of these. Another thing, let me get back to that. So I talked about the Common Craft videos, and how many of you are familiar with Common Craft? You can use the green check. Lila Fever, with the little paper cutouts, it's a great way to give great, very, very simple explanations. It's almost old school, but if you watch one of these and you're like, wow, you know, he's very artistic, but you're like, you know what, I could do something like that. And that's what I said one day, I could do that with my class. And we did. We showed, and this was part of our season's lesson, I had my students cut out pieces of the, actually I didn't tell them, we learned about the seasons, and I told them they needed to create a video just like the videos I showed them. And I showed them one of the Common Craft videos on creating an emergency plan, because that was something they could easily understand. So once I showed them that, and I told them we weren't looking so much for the content of the video from Common Craft, but how they created it, and the little cutouts, and the little slides, and how they moved things around. And so I then told them they needed to create something to explain how the seasons work, and they did. And it was really amazing. So we used construction paper and markers, and everything you see in this video is created by the students. One or two things, they used images that they printed from the printer and colored them in. And I stood on top of a chair, and if you look really closely, you can see scotch tape on the table. That was their screen area. So they're just on a table, and I stood over them with a flip cam. And there's no editing. It was start to finish, one click. They love these. And then all I did was use the embed code. I uploaded it, used the embed code, and published it on my class blog. So we also did for weather and volcanoes and lots of other science topics. And then, you know, let the people know that you're using their ideas. I reached out to Lila Fever from Common Craft. He tweeted about it, and wouldn't you know, he even agreed to do a conference call with my class. And we used Adobe Connect, and he talked to my kids and showed some of his little papers and explained all about how they do their videos. So it was really a wonderful experience all around. My kids got great tips from the man himself. Very, very cool. And you know what? You just need to ask. If you go on a site and ask, you never know what you're going to learn and who you're going to be able to bring into your class or video conference. All you have to do is ask. And that's what I did here with The Secret Life of Scientists and Engineers. I was contacted to blog about Erica Ebel on my Geeky Mama blog. And I checked out The Secret Life of Scientists and Engineers, and I thought, wow, this is a very cool site, because what they do is they profile scientists and engineers who maybe are looked at as very geeky and with test tubes all day, but in fact, they have some kind of secret life. And it just so happens that Erica Ebel was a beauty queen. And all of these scientists on the left-hand side there, they all have some kind of interesting byline, you know, like they're a Native American dancer or hand model or extreme athlete. So when I saw how cool this was, I asked if Erica would be willing to video conference with my class. So it's almost like, you know, they want to ask you for a favor. It's like, well, you know what? I've got a class and they'd be interested, and believe it or not, this is a win-win situation for them, because it's great PR for them. And they used our video and they promoted themselves through what they did for us as well. So it really is a fantastic experience. And here's Erica talking to my students about their science fair projects. My students worked up some questions. They asked about science. They asked about being a beauty queen. And it was really a wonderful experience. And then we created our own secret life of students. And each of my students created something that they do that most people wouldn't know about them. And I know you really can't read that very well, but some of the students wrote that they're soccer players, football players, pianists, horticulturists, and let's see, what else? Animator, artist. So they all wrote about their secret lives. They wrote essays from the third person point of view, And then here they are with their picture. And that got published on The Secret Life Scientist. And since then, they've asked me to blog for them. So I'm now one of the teacher bloggers for The Secret Life of Scientists and Engineers. So that's great fun, and I'm very excited about that as well. So I know we're almost out of time, and I just want to very quickly go over some of the things I do to make sure my parents are on board with the things that I post. I don't create my own form. I go with the official form for my school district. And I think, you know, I'm not an attorney, so I want to make sure that the real attorneys have approved what I'm going to send out. Now, this is what we use in Palm Beach County. And what I do is I add, if there's a place to add something, I add my own items, and that is all of the above, and blogs, podcasts, and video conferences, because the bottom line is I want the parents to give permission. So I don't think you want to go into too much detail that will scare the parents, but if you can put something that's all-inclusive, I think you have a better shot of most parents giving permission. There's also lots of great information that Steve Dembo has aggregated, and he has pulled together many, many great resources on blogging safety, some other people's user agreements, and I didn't want to recreate the wheel, so I created a link to Steve's information. There's also, if you want to create some classroom connections, here's two wonderful resources and websites where teachers who want to get involved with you and you want to get involved with them have created or have posted classroom activities that where they're looking for partners. But you know what? I'm still figuring it out, and I hope you'll help me figure it out, and I can help you, and together I think we'll go somewhere. So I thank you very much for having me today. And if you have any questions or suggestions, I'll be happy to entertain those. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Lee. If you'd like to ask Lee a question, we can give you the ability to use your mic, or you can continue typing your questions and your comments in the chat. These have been some fantastic resources, and the Glam link, I'm sure we'll be getting many, many hits, as it has some fantastic links for you to explore and share with your colleagues and hopefully facilitate these discussions on your campus or in your department. So again, we invite you, if you'd like to take the mic to ask questions, just click on the hand with the green up arrow and we'll give you the ability to do so. And does any Love to Learn is talking about, does anybody use Edmodo? And we had a session on Edmodo a while back. I'll try and find the links in a little bit. And Media Flow is asking me, how did you win the county admin over?
How did I do what?
How did you win over the county admin? I believe that was Media Flow. Is that directed to her current position? Firewalls, okay, and to be able to use the web tools in your classroom.
The web tools in my classroom are district standard. So we don't need Skype. Skype is blocked. The reason we don't need it is because we have a district standard, which is Adobe Connect. We don't need YouTube for posting. Now, we'd love YouTube open so that we can use the content, but as far as posting goes, we have our own internal server where we can post our videos and grab the embed code. Now, as far as using YouTube in the classroom for content, I'm sure you all, or most of you, are probably familiar with something like Zamzar. I'll put it in here. And Zamzar will allow you to convert YouTube videos to movies that you can bring into the classroom, and of course copyright applies, so you don't want to download anything that you're not supposed to, but that allows you to take the content, find it at home, bring the content in, and then you can use it in the classroom. Does that answer the question?
I hope that
yes.
It does.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. Great.
I did see a question about Julia's blog. Julie, all the students' blogs are still up. The student blogs from last year are still up, and the student blogs from this year are up and will continue to be up. I feel very strongly that even though I'm not the student teachers anymore, their content still be up. Now, having said that, what I've done is, like when last year ended, I let the students know that they would have an opportunity to write one last blog post and to comment one last time, and I let them know when the end date would be. And then with kid blogs, you can turn off comments and you could turn off posting, and that's what I did. So all their blogs and comments are still there, but nobody can comment anymore and nobody can post anymore. And as far as this year, when I finally leave, I'm not sure exactly when that will be. It will be within the next couple weeks. I will do the same thing with them. So their content is still there. However, and I meant to mention this at some point during the presentation, we always run the risk when we're using a free service or even a paid service for that matter, that the content you post will go away if the company goes away. So if KidBlogs goes out of business or changes their policies and takes my content with them, then that's what happens. You know, there's nothing you can do about that. There's always a risk with free online tools. So, you know, do go in understanding that. If you're looking for last year's blogs or this year's, there's a couple ways you can find them. Let me go back to the first slide. Let's see. I kind of skipped over because you talked about your glam links. But I do have a site where I keep all my links as well. Let's see. Sorry if I'm making anybody nauseous here. Oh, there it is. It's my Google site where I keep all my conference presentation links. So I don't post my presentations, but I do put all the links for my presentation. And if you click around on there on the left-hand side, you'll find Classroom 2.0 resources. You'll find my class blogs. If you on the main page where I have my bio, and on the right-hand side where it says blogs and social media, you'll see student blogs from 2009-2010 and student blogs from 2010-2011. And all the students' names are listed along the right-hand side. You can go to Julia's blog and you can see all the students' blogs and what they've written.
Great. Thank you very much. And we're going to go ahead and close out the show formally today. And we do hope that everybody will be able to stay on. But if you have to leave, we understand. We want to be mindful of the time and let you know that on December 18th, we're going to have a very special guest as well as another fantastic guest. It's going to be Angela Myers and Amy Sandvold talking about passion-driven classrooms. And Angela popped in. Looks like she stepped out, but she was in for just a bit. So that's going to be a really, really exciting show next Saturday, and that will be the last live show on Saturdays. We are planning a very special end-of-the-year show on Thursday, December the 30th at noon. It's the same time, just on a Thursday instead. And there won't be a session on Christmas Day or on New Year's Day. So we hope that you'll finish out the year with us. And we wanted to let you know that Steve will be interviewing Deborah Meyer on Tuesday, December the 14th at 5 p.m. Pacific and 8 p.m. Eastern. And he will be interviewing Alfie Cohn on Thursday, December the 16th at an early time, 12 p.m. Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern. If you're not in school or and you're free, you might want to join that session. And this is a very special announcement, the EduBlog Awards. And thanks to McKeith, she nominated us for the Best Educational Webinar Series. And we're very grateful for that. And Lee also was nominated for several of the EduBlog Awards. And we hope that you'll vote for us, but there's a lot of competition in our category. But regardless, we do hope that you will vote in the EduBlog Awards for the people in the different categories. And it's really important to support the different bloggers and Ning and social media connect creators. So even if you don't vote for us, we do encourage you to vote at EduBlogAwards.com. And I misspelled the link, but I'll post that in the chat just a bit. But it's edublogawards.com. And as soon as you exit today's session, a survey should open up in your browser automatically. And we do hope that you will take time to give us feedback on today's session as well as topics and guests for future sessions. And you can also request a professional development certificate in the survey part. If for some reason the survey doesn't open, you can always email us at live@classroom20.com. Or if you watch the recording, you can also email us and let us know that you watched the recording, and then Peggy will get those certificates out to you in your email. So give us a few days to get the info back from Illuminate and on the surveys, and then we will and be very careful, of typing in your email address to make sure that it gets to you. And even if some teachers have requested the certificate, even though it doesn't count or they don't need it for hours and so forth, just to put it on their wall and to model that the professional learning that continues in each of our daily lives. So we encourage you. Thank you, Lorna, for posting that. And all of the sessions are posted on our website at live.classroom20.com. All of the resources and recordings are posted on the Archives and Resources page. So we encourage you to check those out after the show sometime. And Peggy also helped assist us in coordinating an iTunes U channel. And to access that channel directly, you can type in tinyurl.com/CR20LiveiTunesU, and that goes directly to our iTunes U channel, opens it up in iTunes for you, and then you can take us with you wherever you go. And we want to give a very special thanks to Lee for joining us today, and of course to Steve Hargadon, who's the founder of Classroom20.com and Future of Education. We want to give a very special thanks to each of you who participated in today's shows and in many of our past shows, as well as to Illuminate and Learn Central for providing this forum for us to meet each and every week. And you can save the chat log by going up to File and Save As and save the chat conversation as a text file. But we will post that on our website later this weekend along with all of the recordings and the MP3 and the MP4s. So we hope that you'll subscribe those and take us with you wherever you go. And Paula, did you want to ask a question or make a comment?
Good morning, everyone. I just wanted to say a personal congratulations to Lee and thanks for sharing. She did an awesome job with her presentation. And I just wanted to know, in your new position, do you feel like you will be able to spread the word and get more educators involved with either classroom blogging or using tools in their classroom and integrating technology better?
Hi, Paula. Thanks so much for that. I'm really excited about it. You know, all the things you just mentioned, that's my intent, and I do think I will be able to. I have the advantage of having been with the team before, and excuse me if I mute my mic because I feel like I'm going to sneeze in a second, but I have the advantage of having been with the team before, you know, for 5 years, so not that I already know what the job is exactly, you know, until you really get in, but I do know a little bit about what the team is capable of, and not just, you know, the people, but within the district. So it is my intent, and I do think I will definitely be able to help facilitate that, and that is my goal.
Thanks, Paula. And do we have anybody else who would like to ask a question or make a comment? And Ian's asking, how big a team do you have and how many teachers do you have to support?
There will be 13 people on the team. There are 13 people on the team. And we have over 12,000 teachers. and about 170,000 students in Palm Beach County.
And will you be working with the librarians or media specialists?
Yes, we work very closely with the library and media specialists. As a matter of fact, my director has a few departments under him, and one of those departments is library media services. And when I was with the team prior, we did a lot of work with library media specialists, and it was one of the best collaborations we had. We worked closely with curriculum. We worked very closely with IT. But mostly we are instructional. We're not the wire pullers. You know, we are definitely instructional. So we work very closely with, library media services, instructional materials, curriculum, you know, the people who are on the ground, definitely.
And Paula asked if you'll be available for guest appearances in Louisiana.
I've never been there, Paula, and I hear there's great food, so if you'll feed me, I'll come.
And let's see. And Jeff asked, are you moving into more of a tech coach position?
If he's asking if I'll be doing more training, the answer is no. I did more training in my previous position with the team, and the team members do more training, but I'll be managing those people. I'll be helping facilitating that and hopefully, you know, bringing up the level of training to more, not quality, this excellent quality training that the team does and has always done. So no, I will not be doing more training. Not with the team. I hope to continue all the workshops and presentations and this kind of thing that I do on the side, though.
Thank you. I pulled the Lorna. I was talking away. And before we go back to Peggy's comment, Ian asked, what age is your core team? Are they young or are they all a variety of ages?
What age is what? You broke
up. The members of your team, the 13 people that you're going to be working with?
I would say the oldest person is probably in his 60s, and the youngest person is in her early 30s, and I'm somewhere in between. Very early 30s.
Jennifer asked, do you have any tips for gearing to students in the lower grades, like first grade? And we did a show with Aviva Dunsinger, and she teaches first grade, Jennifer. But probably one of the best things would be class vlogging, would you say, perhaps, Lee?
Yeah, you can do class vlogging. One of the things you can do is have your own blog. And you can have your own blog, and you can showcase some of the things that are going on in your classroom. There's also, you know, you can use KidBlog and have the students write their own. And, you know, who cares what they're writing as long as they're writing? Just make sure, you know, you're following your policies as far as whatever they are. In my school district, it's no last names. You may have, maybe you're not supposed to post pictures. Whatever it is, make sure you follow closely, because whatever it is that you do, it's not worth any issues that you have to battle. So enjoy the good things that you can do within the policies that you're allowed. Voice threads. I've done voice threads with first graders. You have to do most of the setup, but I have to do most setup with the fourth graders as well. But they can sit in front of a microphone and they can talk into a voice thread. So that's a really easy thing to do with young kids.
And Peggy asked about I've lost it. The chat moved. Talking about the way that you build parent support in your classroom, and do you start at open house and tell them about all of the technology tools their students will be using?
One of the things that I've done, and I think it's really helped this year, was because last year was the first year that I really delved into a lot of the tools that we all know and love, I had content built up. So I had blogs, I had the students' blogs, I had voice threads, I had videos that we'd made. So I had content that I could show as examples. And one of the mistakes I think a lot of people make is that when they show an example, they show too much of it. In order for us to get an idea of a video, we don't need to see 3 minutes. To be truthful, we don't even need to see a full minute. So you can do your open house presentation or curriculum night, whatever you call it, and you can show a 20-second video or excerpt from a video and get your point across. Same thing with a voice thread, you know, just click through to show, just highlight. Show the parents what you did last year. Maybe you don't have content, so show what someone else has done. Feel free to use my content. Show what can be done. And say that these are some of the things that I hope to do with your students this year. In order to do it, I'll need you to sign this consent form so that we can publish your students' work. But be sure to let the parents know that even if you don't sign it, it's okay. I understand if you're not comfortable. Your children will still participate, but their work won't be published. So there's some way your child can still participate, whether it be on paper. Maybe they'll go ahead and type it into the kid blog, but you won't publish it. There's also a way for the kid blog to only be seen by the teacher, other students, only logged in users. If you get involved with kid blog, you'll see the options. They're not overwhelming, but they're really robust. So there's ways to meet your parents' comfort levels. I think, you know, when we did the open house, all of the people on my grade level and other grade levels shared their slide deck. And I think a lot of them follow the conventional slide deck that we always use for many years in open house. Huge, big biography of the teacher. Huge, big 3 slides of all the rules in the classroom. You know, homework policies. You know, a lot of stuff. And if you have children and you've gone to open house and you know, you don't really care about that stuff. You can get it on paper. So what I did was I did the open house like I did this presentation today. I used images for support. I had bulleted lists if I needed words on the slides. And I used videos for emphasis when I needed it. And the parents loved it. And they really felt like they had a good understanding of the feel for the classroom and where I was trying to create a community. And that's my recommendation as far as building parental support. Now, if you know me and you follow my blog, and if you do follow me on Facebook, then you know I still don't have 100% parental support. There's always going to be some parents that will not like you and not like anything you do, and that's just the way it is. But I think I've managed to get most support, and maybe that's helped.
Great ideas. And Jennifer, would you like to take the mic? And it's very important to adhere to your district policy and campus guidelines. Jennifer, is your mic not working?
Working now? Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Good. This is my first time to actually be using Illuminate. Our Jeffrey Richardson is our tech coach at our school. It's called Greystone Elementary, and it's in Alabama. And just to say, Lee, fabulous job on your presentation. Very few times do I hear a speaker and look and the hour's already passed, and I'm like, where did the time go? Usually I'm counting down
the minutes. Oh, thank you so much.
You're welcome. It was very entertaining, and at the same time, I learned a ton of stuff.
Thank you.
I was just sharing a very low-tech idea, and I didn't expect to get the mic, so I'm kind of caught off guard here, but a very low-tech idea that I did with my parent night. I teach first grade, like I said, and I did a PowerPoint presentation, and I actually took, when they came to meet me, the families did, I took pictures of the families with their children, and I also took the children actually participating in some of our daily routines the first week of school before parent night actually happened, and inserted that into my ABCs of Ms. Inslee's class, and it had, you know, all the things that your district and your administration want you to cover with parents, but did it in a friendly way, and I inserted those pictures, and they never knew really where their kids would show up, So I noticed that I have more participation. It was more involvement with the parents. And also, you could hear the, aww, that, you know, you from the parents seeing the pictures of their children. And actually, then those pictures could lead into what I was doing, where hopefully I didn't overwhelm them with technology, because PowerPoint is something that so many people are familiar with. But they also kind of got a glimpse of us using and how we use the technology in our class, and I could go into more detail about it.
I love that idea. I love it. And I bet you didn't have one parent texting while you were talking, because they didn't want to miss their kid being shown up on the screen. And I also love that, you know, while you have a student doing something, that's a great segue into explaining what the student is doing. I love that idea. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. And again, thank you for your fabulous presentation.
Oh, thanks for joining us.
And I'm new to Twitter, so I'm definitely going to go on soon and tweet you. So you'll know me now. So it's Miss E Busy B, the letter C. So be looking
awesome.
For me. Thank you. I enjoy it.
When you tweet me, make sure you tell me that you are in this presentation, okay?
I will, and I appreciate it, Lee. Thanks for being so sharing with your ideas.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And, Jennifer, we encourage you to check out the archives and resources on our website, and I'll post that in the chat, because we have lots of resources on using Twitter in and out of the classroom. We just have a lot of things and a lot of the web tools that we've used. And the other great guests like Lee, and we are very fortunate that we have fantastic guests on our webinars. So we're very grateful that you and everybody have joined us. And Techno Queen, would you like to take the mic?
Thank you very much. I have two questions. One is going back to the policy. You know, when I look at all the policies and it says age restriction 13, or they need to have an email, how do you work around the dummy, you know, like setting up the dummy emails? I understand closing it. If you close those, can you get around the age requirement? Again, I'm just trying to, you know, stay within policy. And my second question really quick is just I want more tech integration. I want to know where I can get more. I'm just finishing my master's. I'll graduate next week. I'm an over 50-something. And I just kind of crave getting more workshops. And I do the classroom live all the time, so I appreciate your answers. Thank you.
Well, I'll answer the second question first. Suddenly there's a lot of feedback. Oh, that sounds good. I'll answer the second question first. I think, you know, coming to Classroom 2.0 Live weekly and seeking out the Discovery Education webinars, you'll end up with so much information that your head will explode. I think that's a great start, but you know that's a great thing to do. As far as the first thing that you asked, I don't attempt to get around any age restrictions. If there is an age restriction on something, I don't use it with my kids. So, and because I think it's there for a reason. So, you know, I think there's always a possibility that somebody could challenge me on why I'm using something that's not appropriate for their students. And they could, I teach in a wealthy community where all the parents know better than I do. And everybody's an attorney or doctor. And I'm there to serve them. So, just so you know, I have to be very careful. And, you know, I just don't take those chances. So I use KidBlog because I can set up usernames and they don't need email addresses. I use VoiceThread and I use an educator account because they don't need email addresses. I don't make any attempt to hack the system. And when I say hack, hacking is simply using something in ways not intended to be used, because I just don't feel I want to take those chances. So I don't have advice to you on that. I don't know. I'm sure there's people who do that and they can advise you better.
I serve that same community, it seems like. So it does make it a little bit tougher, and you know, I really want to follow the rules, but I really want to give them some opportunity to explore some of these other great opportunities. And I have fifth to eighth grade, so eighth graders can almost get on and do almost most things, but it's the other group that we can't.
Well, I would say ask yourself what it is you want to do and see if there's not something that you can do that allows you to do it legally. So, you know, Blogster has education, you know, student accounts. VoiceThread has student accounts. And, you know, if you say, well, I don't want to pay for this VoiceThread accounts, you know, and I'm not saying you, but a lot of people, it's $60 for the year, and it gives you, I think, up to 100 accounts. You know, we spend so much more than that every year on classroom supplies, copy paper, or whatever. So I think it's just a matter of balance, priorities, you know, going to PPA and asking for money, or even collecting $1 or $2 from, you know, each parent and letting them know this is what you want to do and somehow lobbying the right people for support.
Right, I agree. And I think with Gloucester, I became an ambassador, so I got that free upgrade. So that was kind of fun. So, you know, I'm always out there looking for what I can get and keep closed for the kids. So thanks for all your great ideas today.
My pleasure. Thanks for coming.
And John, would you like to try your mic, John?
I want to try. Hopefully you guys can hear me.
We sure can.
Great. Lee, this has been fantastic. I've enjoyed this. This has been just a wonderful session. My question goes along with, you've talked about parents and how getting parents on board with the whole idea of incorporating technology into the classroom. I'm on a technology committee in my district, and it's, and you get a lot of parents who, you know, some are involved, some are not. But the question is now trying to convince the board to go in that direction. And I guess my question would be is if it were you talking to a board, what would you try to express them how to make them understand the importance of using these technologies in our classrooms?
Well, I hear you asking two different things, so I'm going to ask for clarification. Are you asking the board to support using technology in the classroom, or are you asking the board to somehow support a plan to get parents involved?
Yeah, it's more the support of using that technology in the classroom. I mean, the example is we've been blocked from using Twitter. There's also other areas where the district, for example, won't let us bring our own devices that would obviously help the kids connect to the web. So it's more that kind of thing, getting the board to realize the importance of what we're doing.
Well, I would recommend, first of all, it's going to be a slow process. I think you need to get a lot of people with opposing viewpoints together to really hash out the discussion with an open mind about whether you really, really, really do need these things open in the classroom. For example, Twitter. Do you really need Twitter open in the classroom, and if so, why? And is that the battle you want to fight? The other thing is, once you decide it really is worth the fight, I believe you need to present best practices and show the value. So you want to, if you think Twitter's worth the battle, there's that spreadsheet that I showed. I'm not sure if you were in the room when I showed that, but I have a spreadsheet on Google Docs showing all the other people, or not all the other people, but a few other people who are using Twitter in the classroom and with their districts. There are districts even tweeting, many districts that are tweeting, Broward County, right next door to me, they are tweeting, you know, football games and, you know, events. And you can show how it's being used effectively in other places. So that would be my first line of defense and, you know, or I should say offense. But it will be slow, and I would not expect any response the first couple of times. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, it does. Thank you very much. And if you're ever really lonely for snow, up here in Buffalo, I can send it to you anytime you want. Have a good one.
Thank you. And to be honest with you, last year there was a teacher who, unfortunately, he ended up getting sick and couldn't follow through with the activity. But he was going to send us a snowball, and his students, seventh graders, were going to do a science experiment where they had to try to figure out which insulator would work the best. And they were going to, once they determined the winner, they were going to ship us a snowball, and we would then document when we opened it up which snowball made it the best. And we never did get that snowball, So I'm looking for, well, I guess, see, I'm still thinking like a teacher. I guess it won't do us any good. But I could certainly facilitate it with another classroom. So if you want to send a snowball to somebody in Florida and do that activity, it would be really a great activity to do.
That's a great idea. That's really interesting, very innovative. That's true about getting the snowball. Are there any questions that I might have missed that I didn't pull from the chat? If so, we welcome you to put them in the chat before we let Lee go and enjoy her weekend. It looks like things have kind of come to a closing and end for the day. Please join us next Saturday when we will have Angela Myers at the same time. And we have some very special things planned for our December end of the year review session. And we hope that you'll join us for both of those. And those will be the last two sessions of this year. Can't believe it's already passed. And we will be celebrating 2 years in January 2011. So again, please vote for the EduBlog Awards. Consider voting for us. But if you have somebody else in mind, that's fine too. Just please vote and support the EduBlog Awards. And have a great afternoon, everybody, or evening, depending upon what time it is in your neck of the woods and your part of the world. And vote for Lee. She has some great things, and her blog was nominated as well in the EduBlog Awards. So take care, everybody. Have a wonderful weekend, and we hope to see you next Saturday.
Thank you so much, everybody.